Welcome to episode 84 of the BCF.org podcast, The Business of Business. I'm Brian Fisher. In the previous episode, 83, our guest was Robin Osborne discussing going from chaos to clarity. This podcast series focuses on the various subjects and topics to help you run a successful, profitable business. They're approximately 10 to 15 minutes long, so you can listen while commuting. Hopefully, you'll find one or two takeaways to implement per episode. Today's episode discusses executive leadership with Jonathan Bennett. Based out of Ontario, Canada, Jonathan has been where his clients are now. He left an executive role at a large hospital to strike out on his own, founding a management consulting firm. And for 10 years, things were great. The company grew, became a B Corp, and served hundreds of organizations. The problem was he was unfulfilled. After a successful exit in which he went through a management buyout of his company, Jonathan founded his coaching practice so that he could fulfill his purpose to create an intimate space for leaders who need to be listened to deeply. Jonathan Bennett is an advisor and executive coach for founders, CEOs, C-suite leaders who have a purpose in the world but need help solving their organization's toughest obstacles. Jonathan takes his experience as a CEO, board member, and founder to his coaching. Jonathan brings a progressive approach to his work so that clients always find a way out of even the most complex challenges. A published author, he's written 7 literary books. Let's welcome Jonathan Bennett. Jonathan, welcome to the BCF.org podcast, The Business of Business.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Excited to be here.
Thanks for joining us today, Jonathan. Jonathan, I'm always interested in people's stories. What's your background in founding, clearly then, an advisory and executive coaching firm?
So I've spent the last 10 years of my life growing a management consulting firm. We started out as just me and a hope and a dream, and I built and scaled that business over the course of about 10 years and got to a point where I felt like I was coming to the end of the natural end of my leadership journey. And there was an amazing young woman coming through, and I just felt she was the next right CEO. And so we went through some succession planning and a transition plan. I was able to exit about 2 years ago. So the last 2 years of my life, I've been, instead of serving organizations and companies, I've been serving leaders as an executive coach. And that's the real shift that I've been working on in my career development, and also in the things that I really enjoy doing and that I feel really drawn to from a heartfelt perspective.
Speaking of being an executive coach and working with leaders, what are the most common challenges leaders face once they're in the C-suite?
Yeah, it can be pretty lonely. I think that's something that folks don't talk a lot about. You work really hard to get there, and then you're there, and then there's this sense that you should be all that in a bag of chips, as they say where I'm from, that you should be, you know, really polished and really complete. In fact, it's just the beginning of a new chapter for most senior executives, learning how to do it, learning how to influence others, learning how to take up the right amount of space and be the kind of leader that, you know, you always sort of inspired to be. So that can manifest itself in being alone. There's only so much your poor spouse or partner will want to listen to when you bring it home at night, and you can't worry your own employees about what's troubling you. And you probably don't want your colleagues to know that you haven't figured it all out yet either. And you certainly don't want the board to know. So it can kind of feel like you're alone. And so one of the things I'm able to do as an executive coach and trusted advisor is really just hold the space and listen for the deeper, harder things that a senior executive is really struggling with. Sometimes they're really practical. Sometimes they're strategic. And other times they're kind of at the core of who they are and how they exist in the world, like what their purpose is.
Well, that's great. You're an extra set of ears, somebody that they can talk to about what's going on.
Yeah, I hope so. And it's certainly a really private, confidential space. And, you know, the added advantage of talking to me is that I've been there before. And so in addition to being a good listener, hopefully I will have some ideas as well of different things they could try, or I can challenge their thinking and push them to open their heart and mind to a different way of doing something, a different way of leading, something that's going to get them different results.
Well, how do you handle working with clients who don't align with your mission or values? And what can leaders do to more effectively attract clients who do share their mission and values?
I'm pretty rigorous these days. I would go so far as to say, like, my onboarding and kind of sales process is too strong a word, but when I'm getting to know somebody, I'm really looking for a values alignment. I'm really not at the end of my career where I want to work with people that I don't care for. So people self-select out. I found it a B Corp. I care about social accountability and social responsibility in business. And so I have some pretty progressive approaches to business, and people that are really into that, they'll seek me out, and people that are not interested in that tend to just not choose me. And there's other coaches out there and they're good too, and they should go with them. So the second part of your question is really what other people do. I just think that you'll save yourself a lot of heartache if you do the upfront work to get to know the folks that you're working with, because there's nothing worse than having a values misalignment when you're halfway through a project or you're, you know, working with a client and it's not just not being on the same page. It's like you're not even seeing you don't share the same worldview. And that's a really classically difficult problem to overcome. And often it means just unwinding things. And so, you know, my advice is always to just do the upfront work, really take time to get to know one another and make sure that the fit is good. And so you can serve them in a way that's powerful and meaningful, and they're going to get all the value from you and feel really good about the work you're doing together.
We're speaking with Jonathan Bennett, founder of Clearly Then. Jonathan, what advice do you have for leaders who struggle to have a good work-life balance, but cannot or do not want to leave their business or position?
It's perennially difficult. I think that work-life and our life is so enmeshed, especially in the new world order of hybrid working. And boundaries are probably the most important thing to do. And you're in control of your own boundaries. Other people don't breach your boundaries. You need to mark your boundaries and make sure that they're clear and articulated to all of the people that you work with, whether they're your colleagues or your clients, and stick to them, because people test your boundaries. Are you sure you can't take my call? Are we sure that, you know, you won't stay a bit later? And there's nothing wrong with just being clear and firm. And when people know you mean it, then they'll respect it. It's easier to say than to do, though. And especially if you happen to love what you do, then it becomes like any way of, you know, any kind of abuse, substance abuse that you would do. Workaholism is real, and it's insidious the way it creeps in. It makes you feel good. It numbs you. And it's also dressed with the package of, well, I'm making money, this is my business, or this is my career, so of course it's the right thing to do. But none of us are good if we're not healthy. And anybody can do it for a short amount of time, but if it becomes the way you are in your life over time, you are depleted and you can't serve your company, your clients, your staff in the best possible way. And so for me, it's boundaries. It's setting boundaries and maintaining them and making sure that you do check out and turn it off and, you know, reflect that to the folks that work for you as well. Like, you have to lead by example. If you say to them, oh, you know, I want to see your vacations taken this year and I want you to make sure that you don't work on the weekends, but then they see that you are, well, then you can't just say, well, yeah, I own the company, so that's why I'm doing it. You actually have to walk the walk.
Yeah, they'll tend to follow your example. And we all need time to take a break and to smell the roses, so to speak.
We really do. It's so important.
On another topic, with so many acquisitions, how do you help people navigate the emotional journey of a merger or acquisition of their company?
Oh, it's such a big and thorny and juicy topic. First thing to say is people are often not ready. Founders are often not ready. This has been their baby. They were often the person that conceived of the idea, or if they're the owner and they've been an owner for a good long time, it's not just the thing that they go and do every day. It's their identity. And so when something is your identity and suddenly somebody wants to come along and purchase it, or you're getting to the stage in your life where you really want and need to retire, or somebody just comes along with, you know, a bag of money that's pretty hard to say no to. Any and all those situations mean that, you know, you're kind of in the space where you need to be thinking about an exit. What almost nobody's ready for is the emotional impact of that. We were talking off camera right before we jumped in here, and it's really true. I mean, the actual sale part is just a negotiation. You're gonna, you know, try and gussy your company up, and it's the EBITDA and the multiples, and you know, you go through all that, and maybe it's a learning curve for you, or maybe you've done that kind of thing lots of times before. That's really the hard part. The hard part is, who am I now? What am I supposed to do? How do I let somebody else go and do differently with the thing that I controlled for a long time? And that is very, very difficult. And I think any founder that has had a sale, any founder that's exited, knows just the unusually private grief. There's no better word for it, I think. It's a kind of grieving, even though maybe you got paid, even though you should be grateful and it's a wonderful privilege to be in that situation. It was an expression of your identity. It was an expression of yourself, this thing that you grew and scaled, and now it's not yours. And if that loss comes across, I really felt like I rode the Kubler-Ross curve, you know, like I really did, you know, went through all the stages of grief. And I, having talked to other founders that have exited, I know I'm not alone.
That was certainly my case. It is a loss and it is a grieving process. And after 34 years, when I sold the business,
yeah,
I wasn't, like you mentioned, as far as the negotiation side, the financial side, and the terms and conditions, the T&Cs, that was pretty relatively straightforward at the end of the day. What I was not prepared for was the emotional journey that I was going to be on. It took me about a year.
Yep.
What I call come up with Brian 2.0.
Oh, I think that is super common. And I mean, I certainly went through the same thing. I mean, I had a sense that I wanted to move into executive coaching when I was, you know, leaving. My exit took about not 18 months from sort of start to finish. It's humbling to be handing over your company, to be allowing the control to into somebody else's hands. You know, in my case, to have all these staff that reported in some way directly up to me, suddenly realign their allegiances overnight to a new person. And, you know, you're sort of like, what? You know, like, am I nothing now? Like, what is this? You know, but it's amazing how quickly humans, you know, will like, they know, you know, they know the way things are going here, right? And they get it. So, you know, they shift and you're left going, wow, I guess it really wasn't ever all about me. So it's very humbling and probably healthy, but emotionally trying at times for sure.
Well, Jonathan, what results have you seen with businesses and people that have implemented your suggestions?
Well, I've worked with a wide variety of leaders across many different sectors. I'm pretty sector agnostic. I really like social purpose businesses and people that have got something they want to create in the world or something that they're trying to grow and change. I'm really drawn to leaders with a mission. What I think when I'm working at my best, I'm able to allow people to have breakthroughs, to see things new and fresh. Because I use a blend of coaching and trusted advisory work, I exhaust the opportunity for the person to self-discover the answer. And sometimes I've seen it done elsewhere in other ways. And so that's where, having been there before, I'm able to say, you know, I've seen this done a couple of different ways. Like, here's some suggestions for you. And then we can workshop one of them. And so, you know, hopefully it's just the right balance of both that I can give to my clients. You know, I've had people change careers. I helped a leading executive recruiter reinvent themselves as an artist and an entrepreneur. I've seen people sell companies. I've seen my clients buy companies. I've seen my clients build themselves their very first advisory board. I've seen lots of career pathing. Who am I really? Do I really want to be the CEO? Do I want to stay the CEO? Like, everyone's on a different journey. And, you know, I think it's my job to just sort of gently support them so they can sort themselves out and think through whatever it is that is in front of them and how to best make use of the next stretch of time.
We're speaking with Jonathan Bennett, founder of Clearly Then. Jonathan, is there anything I've not asked that you'd like to add?
Just that I'm always happy to connect with folks on LinkedIn. I write an awful lot. I use LinkedIn as a place to brain dump anything that's going on in my practice, work through issues and ideas. And so if you're hearing this and you're wondering, you know, how do I get in touch? Like, reach out on LinkedIn. I'm a real human. I answer my DMs. Always interested in talking to leaders that are facing something hard or difficult, a big decision. That's really what I'm there for. So if that sounds like you, for sure, reach out.
Jonathan, thank you for joining us today on the BCF ORG podcast, The Business of Business.
Thank you so much for having me, Ryan.
My sincere thanks to Jonathan Bennett for joining us today. Managing the performance of your company is one of the most important things you do as a leader. This podcast is on over 20 directories. Subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcast. In search, type BCF ORG. Be sure to leave a space between BCF and ORG. Feel free to share this podcast with people who you think may benefit. A strong rating of these podcasts would be appreciated. If you'd like to reach out to me for business consulting or with any questions, comments, ideas, or potentially be a guest like Jonathan, please go to bcforg.com. There's a red Contact Us button in the middle of the homepage. A LinkedIn symbol's on the upper right. Click on that if you'd like to see my profile. All the podcasts are available by clicking on the website podcast page in the reference bar. These podcasts will be released the first and third Tuesday each month. In the next episode, 85, our guest will be Lisa J. Smith, discussing finding the holes in your sales process. In business, running a successful, profitable business is the ultimate scorecard. You're never done and can always be better. It tends to be more fun than work, frustrating at times, but can be very rewarding. From BCF ORG Corp, I'm Brian Fisher, wishing you the best. Thanks.